My name is C. Scorgel, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm very grateful to be here. By the fact of my age, I'm grateful to be anywhere. And it's nice to be invited back to Atlanta, because I've been here before, and it's sure good to be invited back, because I can remember a time in my life where I never was invited the first time. So it's tough to be invited back if you haven't been invited the first time. I had a little resentment last night when Bob was speaking. He talked about that great conference that they have, Gopher State, and how I give them a hand starting it. It was Mac Cheater and Tommy Breen, they're both gone to the great roundup now, and myself. But he left Tommy and Mac out, and he said me, and he brought two Americans in to help start it. That's what he said, and that's wrong. It was three Canadians. And then I got thinking, last year there were over 7,500 people at that roundup, and I haven't been invited to speak there for over 10 years. That hurts me. I'm sure that Bob will go back and tell the committee that I'm hurt. It's just good to be here. I'm not going to tell you about my drinking too much. I'm just going to tell you I did drink. I'm not here by mistake. I never had a drink. I grew up in a real spiritual home, my grandmother and grandfather. My grandmother was a very spiritual lady, and she taught me all of the good things that I forgot when I was about 15. And I was a good athlete, did a lot of good things as an athlete. When I was 16 years old, I became restless, irritable, and discontented. I had never had a drink, to my knowledge, till that time. And I didn't run away from home. I just went to a neighboring town. I came from a very small town. And I joined the Army when I was 16 years old in 1940. And that night I got in that big uniform and I went downtown with the rest of the men and I had my first glass of beer. And man, oh man, oh man, things started to happen to me. All of a sudden, I was a great conversationalist. All of a sudden, somebody said to this little kid something that I didn't like, and I got muscles. And I offered to fight him. Then we went dancing. And you should have seen me. I was Canada's own Fred Astaire. For the benefit of you young people, he was a great dancer. But nothing compared to me that night. Then I took a girl home. And, you know, Charles Boy and all those guys were the great lovers of those days. Nothing on me, I can tell you. But the next morning I woke up in that armory's that scared little boy that had come in the day before. But every time I went into the beer parlor, I could be what I wanted to be. I did very well in the Army. I became an instructor. But I got kicked out when I was 17. And I went back home and got a job in an aircraft factory, building airplanes. And I became restless, irritable, discontent again, and I ran back into the Army. Told them I'd never been in before. And this time I was a genius, believe me. I got recommended for my commission. Loved to stand here and tell you that I was an officer in the Canadian Army, but I got kicked out when I was 18. And I went back home and got a job in a newspaper and selling advertising. Did very well. And it was good. You're out in the street all the time, meeting with the guys and going in the beer parlor. Maybe you'd sell an ad in there, you know. Then I was with some guys, and they were all going into the Navy. So I joined the Navy. Fortunately for me, I stayed in the Navy until the war was over. When I was 19 years old, I got married to that little girl that I'm still married to. It's really not my deal. It's a good deal that I'm still married to her. A couple of times she asked me to leave. And I was just too pig-headed. I get kicked out of the Army, I wasn't going to get kicked out of my own house. So we're still married. We had our wedding anniversary the other day, and I phoned her and told her I was away on the 14th, and I was with my grandson, and I phoned her and wished her a happy anniversary. And she'd forgotten. There wasn't. I like that. Lack of gratitude, you know? Just lack of gratitude. But I did very well in the Navy. I became an instructor, got recommended for my commission. Loved to stand here and tell you that I was an officer in the Canadian Navy. But I got kicked out of officer's training. It seems that an officer didn't appreciate me telling him what he could do with his ship. And really and truly, when I look at some of the ships when I'm down in the United States and by the ocean, it's really a physical impossibility to do with that ship. What I told him to do with it. But I didn't get kicked out of the Navy, I just got kicked out of officer's training. And I became a gunner on a merchant ship. And I sailed all over the world, and I drank all over the world. And I want to tell you folks that we carried some Canadian Club whiskey down to New Zealand and Australia for your servicemen. We couldn't buy whiskey in Canada at that time. There wasn't any. I found out why. We were selling it to you guys down in the islands. And something happened down there, and none of you people have ever thanked me for it. All of the list whiskey that we were taking down didn't get there. We found out how to open those plates up at night. You had to steal it by the case. And we stole some of your whiskey. And when we got it all unloaded, not all of it, the stuff that was stolen, we had it hidden. But when one of your ships got torpedoed, one was taking some tanks into New Guinea, and they towed it back into Melbourne, Australia, And we were the only ship that was empty, and the government ordered us to take your tanks, not drunken tanks, fighting tanks, up to New Guinea. And we took them up there, and those Japanese people were very narrow about that. And they were shooting at us and trying to torpedo us, but we got them delivered. And you've never ever really thanked me for that. But on the way back to Australia, we found the alcohol that hadn't been unloaded. And we started having a party. We're getting back close to Australia, and our own aircraft came out to meet us. And we thought it was a Japanese aircraft coming back. And so we started to shoot at them. And you have to visualize this. The captain is up here a little higher than this, and I'm down there in charge of the big forward gun. And we're just really giving it. And suddenly the captain realized we're shooting at our own aircraft. And he got real panicky. I don't know why. We weren't hitting them. And he had to stop us from firing. And he got on that big megaphone and goes to all the microphones, to all of the guns. And he screamed down into that microphone, "Cease fire!" And I thought, boy, the old captain's getting pretty friendly. He's calling me by my first name. So I fired. Fortunately, I didn't hit anything. But he told me if I had, I'd have been a Japanese ace. And so that was my big war career. And while I was in that Navy, I got married to that little girl, Babe. And we have two daughters. And we have a pretty nice home. But when I came back from the Navy, I thought I was still in the Navy. And I thought I went every night when I'd finish work, I would pretend I was going ashore. And I'd go to the bar. And Babe was a little narrow about that. And I start getting jobs, and I start losing jobs. I couldn't figure out why people were firing me. And finally, I got a job as a recreational director at a jail. And I had been a recreational director in the service, and boy, they really needed me. They decided they were going to have recreation. We have jails all over my city, and I just loved the job. But I got restless, irritable, and discontent again in that job. And after 2.5 years, I quit. And I went in business for myself with a partner. We went in the plumbing and heating business. That was a mistake. And he knew something about it, but I really didn't. So I moved to a small little town, and one day my Babe took our two little girls and moved back to our original town, and I went down to tell my partner what had happened to me, because I was drinking a whole lot. And he suggested that I move back to the other town, and he'd pay me out when he could. So I moved back, and I got a job in the fur business, selling fur coats out on the road. And that was a bad move, too. And I was working straight commission, but I liked the job. I really liked the job. Probably because I was selling them to ladies. And I also like ladies. And I did really well in that, and so well, as a matter of fact, that the opposition noticed that I was selling a lot of coats, and so the opposition hired me. But before he hired me, I learned how to play poker when I was in the service. I learned how to cheat playing poker. And one night I got in a poker game, and I got caught cheating. And it's okay to cheat in a poker game, but don't ever get caught by the guy that caught me. He weighed 275 pounds. He was an ex-commando in the Canadian Army, and he and I had a fight. Or I should say, he had a fight. Finally, I stayed down because I couldn't get up. Makes sense, doesn't it? And they took me off in an ambulance to the hospital, and that was before Medicare in Canada, and I wanted a private room, naturally. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. Bob was telling me about financial problems, and I wrote a check, a bad one, for my financial, for my private room. And fortunately, my doctor was a doctor that I'd been in the service with. And he came in the first morning to see me. And I didn't want anybody to see me because I'd looked in the mirror when I went to the bathroom and I wasn't in too good a shape. And he sat down and had an honest talk with me. And he told me the truth about myself. He told me that I was alcoholic. He told me that I needed help. He told me about Alcoholics Anonymous. And he left me lying there in that bed. And I thought about it all day long. Until that night, he sent two people to see me. Two men that I knew. And they came in to see me. And they were dressed up. And they looked good, and they were smiling, and they didn't bawl me out. They told me about themselves, and I knew about them because I had drank with them. And they told me that the next morning that they were going to have an emergency meeting. There was only one group in our town at that time, and they were going to have an emergency meeting just for me. On a Saturday morning. And they asked me if I would come, and nobody else had come to see me, and so I thought I better go, and these guys want me. So, but I had a little problem. The check had come back from the bank, and I was in a Catholic hospital, and I'm a Protestant. And that's a bad deal with a bad check. And that little sister, she wanted her money. And so I phoned the only person that my credit was any good with, and that was my bootlegger. He was a taxi driver, and I could get credit from him any time. And I phoned him up, told him I was in the hospital, and I'd like a ride downtown. And when he came, I borrowed enough money to pay the check off. And he took me down to my first AA meeting in a restaurant. And there were other people in the restaurant, but these 15 people, that's how many people were in AA in Prince Albert at the time. I knew every one of them. And they told me that that night there was going to be a mixed meeting. That's what they called it at that time. And they'd like Babe and I to come to the meeting. And as I say, nobody else was inviting me to go anywhere, so I said, fine, I'll be there. And then they said, well, we'll take you home. And I said, no, 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 no. I can go home. It's all right by myself. because I'd been away some other times for a few days. And when somebody took me home, Babe would run them off. And I didn't want to run these guys off because I was, you know, they seemed to be very friendly. And I wanted to keep them. And so they took me home. And do you know what happened? Babe opened the door, and it seems that this was before Al-Anon in Prince Albert, but a couple of ladies had been up to see her and told her what they were going to try to do with me. And she kissed me and told me, she said, "I think everything is going to be okay, hon." And if nothing else, I stayed sober that day because she had changed already. I just thought this is a good deal. Now I was 27 years old, and we went to our first meeting that night, and all of those guys that I was with in the morning, all of a sudden they got older. They were real old. And I thought, my God, you know, I made a bad decision, another one. But they had a social, and they were playing games. And Babe was having herself a great time. But I'm sitting watching, and they played Pin the Tail on the Donkey. And I thought, my God, what have I got into here, you know? But everybody was having a good time except me. And then they had a meeting. And a guy stood up and he said he'd been sober for a year. And I knew him. I thought, liar. I knew that he drank when he was out on the road because he's a travel man. I just had him figured out right there. But after the meeting, a little guy by the name of Bobby took me in the other room and he wanted to sell me a book. And I said, "I haven't got any money, Bob." And he said, "We'll sell it to you on an installment plan. 50 cents a week, can you afford that?" Naturally, I could afford it. Even if I couldn't, I said I would. So I bought my first book on the installment plan. Then he told me that there's going to be two meetings a week at that group, and I had to be there. And then he told me that I had to find a sponsor. And I looked over, and I saw Elmer. He was dressed up. The last time I saw him, he didn't look too good. But that night, he looked really good. I thought, boy, he'd been sober quite a while, probably. And I went over and I said, "Elmer, they tell me I have to have a sponsor. Will you be my sponsor?" I don't think Elmer knew what a sponsor was. But thank God he said yes. Elmer was my sponsor for 51 years. He died last year. And as I told you, I was a Protestant. Elmer was a Catholic. And we had a funeral in the Catholic Church. And the priest had done a lot of penitentiary work, and Elmer and I had. And the priest sort of asked me if I'd take the thing over. I had to give the eulogy. And he said, "Would you just take it over from there?" Can you imagine a Protestant in a Catholic church? And I'm up there, and so I start bringing the guys up, say a few words, what Elmer meant to them. And we had the biggest AA meeting that's ever been held in a Catholic church. And everybody loved it. The organist who plays at every funeral, he said, "This is the best funeral I've ever seen, Susie." I think the priest wanted to take me on steady. But he liked it too. But You know, when you lose a sponsor, it's a tough thing. Because Elmer and I saw each other on a weekly basis. We saw each other at meetings. We saw each other for coffee. We saw each other when Gertie and Elmer would come down and see Babe and Ara, would go to their house. We went to every international conference, starting in Long Beach, together. We went to roundups together. We went everywhere together. And Elmer's sponsor died, and Elmer asked me to be his sponsor. So we sponsored each other, and that wasn't such a bad deal. And I'll tell you what, when Elmer passed away, I knew that he'd want me to get another sponsor. And I sponsor a little guy by the name of Jimmy. Jimmy's 22 years sober. And I asked Jimmy if he'd be my sponsor. And now Jimmy's my sponsor. And I'm his sponsor. And we get along real good. Because it's important that you have a sponsor. I know, because I had the good one for 51 years. And I was with Elmer just the night before he died. And I said, I didn't know he's going to die. I said, Elmer, if you need me, call me. And he said, who else would I call? That's the last words that Elmer said to me. I went to see him the next day in the hospital, and he was sleeping. Next morning, they phoned me and told me he passed away. And, you know, when you lose a sponsor, you really lose something. And especially if you have a good relationship with a sponsor. I see people who have sponsors who they never see, or they never phone. They just say, so-and-so is my sponsor. Please don't do that. If you're going to get a sponsor that you're going to see on almost a daily basis. It's that important. But I tell you, over the years, Elmer and I have had a great time in Alcoholics Anonymous. When we first were in that first group that we had, we used to, nobody knew a great deal about Alcoholics Anonymous, and they used to talk about how much they drank. And Elmer said, there's got to be more to this thing than how much we drank. And we start studying this book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We start doing work at the penitentiary, telling them about this big book. Then we got a guy come into town by the name Ernie. Ernie came from another town. And you know, when someone comes from another town, you think they're a genius. And we asked Ernie to chair the meetings for the next three months. And Ernie said, I'll chair them if you do one thing. We said, what's that? He said, I want us to go through the steps in sequence. And so we thought, well, we'll humor old Ernie, we'll go along with that. We all put up our hand that we would do with that. And that is a story that I want to share with you tonight. It's about going through those steps, and not going through the steps, but doing the steps. We went to the first meeting. Ernie told us to bring our big books. We all brought our big books. Ernie told us to go home and read the first 164 pages. And Elmer and I would phone each other, and we'd say, I wonder what Ernie's going to ask us. And we sort of asked each other questions about what we had studied in the book. We went back the next meeting, and Ernie didn't. He said, how many read the first 164 pages? Everybody put up their hands. Didn't ask us a question. That's the only question he asked us. And I mean, we were kind of hurt because we knew quite a bit about the big book then. Then the next week we went, and not the next week, that very night, he says, okay, we're going to take step one tonight. We're admitted we're powerless over alcohol, their lives have become unmanageable. Does everybody admit that? Up with the hands. Well, he said, we'll not have any problem then. He put his hand up, and we studied the first step. And he said, will you go home now? The 12 by 12 wasn't there then. And we studied this big book, and Elmer and Gertie would come over to our house, and Babe and I would go to their house, and Babe and Gertie would play cards, and we would study the book. And we started to go through those steps. And believe me, it was the experience of my life. The greatest thing that has ever happened to me. Took that first step, I knew I was alcoholic, but then I really admitted that I was alcoholic. I started looking at my life, I realized I had an unmanageable life, all of the things that happened to me, and were still happening to me sober. Next week, step two. How many did step one? Up with the hands. What we didn't know was that Ernie knew less about it than we did. But he'd come from another city and we hadn't questioned him. But he was having a lot of trouble in Alcoholics Anonymous, and so he came there and decided he was going to do something about it. What he was going to do was go through the steps. And when we told him he was chairman, he chaired it. And he was an intelligent man. He was in the money lending business. And he just did a great job. He did the study of that big book, and we went through all those steps. And I remember when he came to step four, he brought us all a pencil and a paper. And we said, what's this about? And he said, well, I've heard people say they couldn't find a pencil and a paper. So I don't want that excuse. So Elm and I went home, and we kept phoning each other, and we kept writing things down, as it says in the book. And we went down back, and we thought, well, Ernie will really ask some questions about this, because it was now we were doing something. He said, how many did their step four? Everybody did their step four. Not one question. Now we're on to step five. So back down here, I see a lot of people take the step five with a sponsor. Back home, we take it with a man of the cloth. Now, in page 74 of this big book, this one here I bought in the United States, and it says, those of us belonging to a religious denomination which requires confession must, I imagine that's the Catholics, and of course will want to go to the properly appointed authority which duty it is to receive it. Though we have no religious connection, we may still do well to talk with someone ordained by an established religion. Now it says that on page 74. And so Elmer and I both, we knew a little archdeacon, and we went to him and took our fifth step. And do you know that everybody in that group took their fifth step that week? And believe me, all of a sudden, we were a different group. We weren't talking about drinking anymore. We were talking about a program and how great this program was. It was a fabulous deal. And then we went on to step six and seven, we're entirely ready to have God remove all his defects of character, and believe me, Ernie said, "Are you ready?" And we all put up our hands. "No," he said, "are you really ready?" And we put up our hands again. And so we did step 6 and 7 the way it's supposed to be done. And we start noticing a change in each other. We start noticing a change in ourselves. Our families start noticing a change in us. It is something that is so important. Are we entirely ready to have God remove these defective characters? And then are we humbly asked them to remove our shortcomings? My grandmother taught me if you wanted to be humble in prayer, you got down on your knees. And I got down on my knees and I said, "Please, God, give me a hand with this." Just as simple as that. And all of a sudden, I found myself changing. I got a new job. The job I was doing, I got a job with another fur company. A better job. Because even he noticed the opposition, that I was doing more business than he was. And why was I doing more business? Was because I was working and because my attitude was right. And that's what that program's all about. And you know, I find as I go around the country, and I can say what I want to say, I got more sobriety than anybody else tonight. And, and so I'm not bragging about it. That was an observation I made. And but I start doing a lot of things in AA. And I made a little deal. Elmer and I got together and we said we should have a quiet time. And in that quiet time, we wrote down, read page 86, 87, and 88. Read page 63, the third step prayer. Read page 76, seventh step prayer. And then read 83 and 84, the promises. And that's what we're entitled to. And then read 132. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. Read page 164, the last two paragraphs. 449 of the old book on acceptance. And page 99 of the 12 and 12 of St. Francis Prayer. And we start doing that. And then we noticed a real change in the group. Then we started doing work at the penitentiary and had them do these steps the way we were doing them. And we noticed a big change there. And you know, this little deal, I used to read this out, and when I'd Finnish people would come up and shaking hands and they'd say, "Give us those pages." Well, you know, I mean, you'd be there for 4 days shaking hands, giving people pages. So I had these made up and I gave them out. And then I ran out of money getting these made up. And so I did a, what to call, for the lack of a better word, I did a retreat over in Chicago. And the guys phoned me from over there and they said, "We want that deal on tape." And I said, "Well, put it on tape." No, we want your voice on tape with doing all this reading. So I did that. And I did it, went out to the radio station, they played some nice music behind, and I did all that reading. I went to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and the people, as we put them, through the steps with the same program, we gave them that tape. And so I asked the guy in Tulsa if he would run me off some tapes. And so he listened to it, and he came and he said, "Do you mind if I put that in the library?" And I said, "No, go ahead." And he said, "Well, would you mention it?" And so I mentioned it, and he sold 104 tapes of the Daily Spiritual Guide. That's what he called it. I got over to Nashville, and a guy in Nashville said, "Boy, that's a great tape, that Daily Spiritual Guide." And I said, "Well, how do you know?" And he said, "The guy from Tulsa sent it to me." And then they start sending it all over, except to Atlanta. I checked last night, it's not in your tape. Not only that, is it not in there. There's not even a tape of me in there. And I checked a couple of times. And I found a few resentments coming back. Several of the people that I sponsor, like Tom I sponsor Tommy. And he's got a whole bunch of tapes in there. Bob that spoke on Friday night, I don't sponsor him, but I help sponsor him because he needs several people. And I see his tape in there about everything. I mean, he talks about everything. He's got tapes on. I see a lot of guys. So I asked the tape guy, I said, "Do you happen to have a tape of Cease Corgill?" He didn't even know who Cease Corgill was. That kind of hurt me, you know, right there. But so this tape is available, but you'll have to phone another taper somewhere to get it. Usually what I do is I bring one with me and get it to tape, and then tell them when people want those deals, I tell them it's on tape. But I didn't bring it because I was sure it would be here ahead of me. But you know, sometimes it says you have some bad days. But last night I forgave the tape manager. I said my prayers. I said, you know, God bless him, and I hope he sells lots of those other guys' tapes. And I hope he's taping me tonight, and maybe you'll get one of my tapes. The reason I'm sharing it with you is that I believe it's probably the greatest thing in the world that we can do. And there's a lot of people in AA who aren't doing what you're supposed to do. It says, "Here are the steps we took." Doesn't say, "Here are the steps we're going to take." It says, "Here are the steps we took." And that, back in Canada, that means we took them. And, you know, AA is really, really watered down a bit. Do you ever see people sitting having coffee, and they have what I call the shady dozen? And someone says, "I heard." Someone else says, "They say." Then somebody else says, "Everybody says." Then they say, have you heard? And then they say, did you hear? Then they say, isn't it awful? Then they say, people say. Then they say, did you ever? Then they say, somebody said. Then they say, what do you think? And they say, don't say I told you. And then they say, oh, I think it's terrible. I call that the shady dozen. And that is negative thinking. That is negative thinking. I want to tell you a story about a negative barber. Guy sitting in a barber chair one day and he says, I want a haircut to last me 3 weeks. Barber said, why 3 weeks? Well, he said, I'm going on vacation. The barber said, where are you going? And the guy said, I'm going to London, England. The barber says, you're not going to London, England. He said, I am. He said, you're not. He said, I am. Wouldn't go there if I were you, he said. Now, I've never been there, but I heard, lousy place to go. Too many people, too many cars, everything. So the guy said, look, just cut my hair. If I don't like it there, I'm going to Paris. Barber says, you're not going to Paris. He said, I am. He said, you're not. He said, I am. Wouldn't go there if I were you. I've never been there either, he said, but I heard they really fleece the tourists. Guy said, look, if I don't like it there, I'm going to Rome. The barber says, you're not going to Rome. He said, I am. He said, you're not. He said, I am. Wouldn't go there if I were you. He said, I don't know, but he says, I heard a lot of Catholics there. The guy said, I don't care. He said, I'm a Catholic. Yeah, but he said, I heard different kind of a Catholic there. 3 weeks later, the guy come back, slid into the barber chair. The barber said, how was your trip? He said, it was good. He said, it wasn't. He said, it was. He said, you didn't go to London. He said, I did. He said, you didn't. He said, I did. Love to stay there long. I want to get on to Paris. He said, you didn't go to Paris. He said, I did. He said, you didn't. He said, I did. Love to stay there longer. Really like it, but I want to get on to Rome. He says, you didn't go to Rome. He says, I did. He says, you didn't. He says, I did. Love to stay there longer, but he said, I had to come home. But he said, a funny thing happened to me over there. He said, I met the Pope. I got an audience with the Pope. I bent down to kiss the Pope's ring. And you'll never believe what the Pope said. And the barber said, what? And he said, where in the hell did you get that lousy haircut? And you see, that's what negative thinking had turned us into. Did you ever sit around the coffee shop doing what I just said we're doing? Have you heard? Did you hear? Boom, boom, boom. It goes on, and all of a sudden, we are definitely off the AA. Al-Anons do this, too. And off the AA and the Al-Anon program. Sad, sad thing. Really a sad thing. And you know, but we get that kind of thinking. And you know that there's just a whole bunch of things that happen to us when we get negative thinking. You know, I heard another story about a guy that had a ranch. And another guy said to him, where did you get the name of your ranch? And he says, well, I wanted to call it the Barbecue. My wife wanted to call it Susie Q. My son wanted to call it the Bar Susie Q. And my daughter wanted to call it Susie Bar Q. So we called it the Bar Q, Susie Q, Susie Bar Q, Bar Susie Q. And the guy said, that's a great name, but where are the cattle? He said, none of them ever survived the branding, you know. And that can happen to us. If we get negative thinking, you know, and start arguing about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, just read it. Just read it. That's all we have to do. And get, you know, enthusiasm. Enthusiasm I talked a little bit about this afternoon. And enthusiasm is a spiritual thing. And let's get enthusiastic about Alcoholics Anonymous, because boy, oh boy, Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon's a pretty great thing. And here it says, enthusiasm, that certain something that makes us great, that pulls us out of the mediocre and commonplace, that builds us a power. It glows and shines, and it lines looks in our faces. It glows in our faces. It lights up our faces. Enthusiasm, the keynote that makes us sing and makes men sing with us. Enthusiasm, the maker of friends, the maker of smiles, the producer of confidence. It tells all men that AA is doing a swell job. AA, the AA group or AA group just suits you. The new way of life you've found is the best. Enthusiasm, the inspiration that makes you wake up and live. It puts spring in your step, spring in your heart, twinkle in your eye, confidence in yourself and your fellow man. Enthusiasm. If you have it, you show it. You show it in your home. You show it in your church. You show it in your community. AA group gets it. Your fellow man loves it. And you and yours benefit from it. Enthusiasm. It changes a deadpan AA or Al-Anon to a producer, a pessimist to an optimist, a loafer to a go-getter. Enthusiasm. Do you have it? Then thank God for it. If you haven't got it, get down on your knees tonight and ask God for it. Simple as that, isn't it? That's what the AA program's all about. That's what the steps are about. That's what's about this weekend. Enthusiasm. You know, learning what we can about the program and trying to live it. Just one of the greatest, greatest, greatest things in the world. And I can tell you that the day that that doctor told me that I had to join Alcoholics Anonymous, I lay there and I was thinking, my God, you know, I'm 27 years old. I wonder, should I do this? I had nowhere else to go. I didn't think too much of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was something like, I don't know whether you have, I was in the fur business. We have alcoholic rabbits back home. And we call them mink. And there were three of them. And they were called Foot and Foot, Foot and Foot, Foot, Foot. And Foot, Foot used to phone him Foot, Foot, Foot. He'd say, let's pick up old Foot. We'll go down to the bar. So Foot, 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 and Foot, Foot to pick up old Four and the Foot. And they went down to the bar. One night, Foot, Foot was sitting talking to Foot, Foot, Foot. And Foot, Foot, Foot said to Foot, Foot, where's Foot? And Foot, Foot said to Foot, 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 well, he's here just a minute ago. He went outside. So Foot, Foot, and Foot, 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 they went outside. They found poor old Foot. Foot's dead. Foot, Foot said to Foot, 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 what do you think we should do with Foot? Foot, Foot, Foot said to Foot, Foot, well, we should take him to the funeral home. After the funeral, Foot, Foot said to Foot, 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 he said, what do you think old Foot died from? And Foot, Foot, Foot said to Foot, Foot, he said, you know, he's drinking quite a bit. Foot, Foot said to Foot, 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 do you think he was alcoholic? And Foot, Foot, Foot said to Foot, Foot, he said, well, I don't know, but he's sure drinking a lot. Foot, Foot said to Foot, 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 do you think we're alcoholic? And Foot, Foot, Foot said to Foot, Foot, he said, well, we were drinking with Foot. We were drinking a lot, too. So Foot, Foot said to Foot, 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 he said, you think we should join Alcoholics Anonymous? And Foot, Foot, Foot said to Foot, Foot, might as well. He says, we've got one foot in the grave anyway. Some of you young people, you might think that's what happened to you, you know, but this is a joyous program. They tell us we can be joyous and free, and believe me, that's true. And you know, we step, that's step 11. Step 10, you know, we really get after step 10, and we it's really something when we start doing it, you know. 9, making the list. 10, making the amends, cleaning off the wreckage of the past and all of those things, being able to walk down the street and not worry who you meet, being able to go to a social function, not worry about who's there because you've cleaned away the wreckage of the past. Everything's great, but we have to do it. If you don't do it, it's bad. You're just the same as when you were drinking. You start dodging people. But it says we can be joyous and free. But we can't be joyous and free unless we go through those steps in sequence and do them. That's the only way that alcoholics or Al-Anon are going to get to be really joyous and free. And I can remember in step 11, my two daughters, I told you, we have two daughters, and you will never believe what they did. They both married Catholics. Then they had kids. The kids went to Catholic school. Guess who had to drive them? Grandpa. And I'd drive them, and the sisters would say, "Morning, Mr. Corkle." And I could smile and say hi, because no longer did I have any hard feelings against Catholics. Not even you, Byzants. I want to tell you about a story about Byzants. I knew Bob when he was a high roller, when he was that $8 million. That is no lie. They talked about the other night, because I got part of it. Linda, his wife, is a beautiful lady. He came up to Winnipeg, Manitoba, and he's up there and he wants to get Linda a fur coat. Well, I looked after that right smartly. He mentioned last night that the coat was stolen. The reason the coat was stolen was because it had the Cease Corrigal label in it. And people were taken, became that, at least I thought, that became more valuable, that label in it. And when he phoned me, I said, it's happening all over the world. When they say Cease Corrigal label, they just steal a coat. Well, he phoned me one day, and we're going on a Sober Sailor's cruise. Now, nobody else in the world would ever think of this and ever do it. He said, it's Linda's birthday when we're on a Sober Sailor's cruise. He said, what do you think? You got any ideas what I should get her? He asked, don't worry about it, I'll look after her. Linda wanted a Canadian Majestic mink fur coat. We're out in the middle of the Pacific. And I delivered the coat out there in the month of July. Now, I'm not that saying I'm a good salesman, but I think I am. Not only that, he paid me. And I think I still tell everybody that's how good a salesman I am. I don't know of anybody else in the world who has sold a Canadian Majestic mink coat in the middle of the Pacific Ocean in the middle of July. There's nobody. But I did, and I feel real good about that, and Linda felt really good about it, and it's just been a wonderful life. Bob and I have been very, very, very good friends for a long, long time, and I hope we'll be good friends for a lot longer. And, they talked tonight about my hockey kid. I'm privileged now to do promotional work for hockey teams. I don't tell them how to play hockey, I tell them how to think. Mostly AA stuff. I make every game, I fax them something to think about, fax it to the coach, he puts it on the locker. Those of you who are all about hockey now, you haven't got a very good team, but you know about hockey. And it's at least down here. And he puts it on their locker, and they get a new different deal every game. I do this for several teams, and I love doing it. And my grandson was playing for a hockey team, and he got a scholarship in Ferris State University. Left there, came home because he didn't like it. But that's not the end of the world that he came home. He's still going to play hockey. He's still going to go back to school. And he's still a smart kid. But I was privileged to speak when they won the provincial championship, like a state championship, in the league that he was playing with back a couple of years ago. And that was one of the proudest moments in my life, when they asked me to be the speaker at their closing banquet. And I finished up like this, and I'm going to finish my talk tonight with it. And it said, I said, I tried to play hockey, and I'm a hockey fan. I like to go to hockey games, and I just like to think that maybe tonight my manager up above is saying to me, Cease, I'm getting up a hockey team, and I want you to be the assistant coach. Now you're going to need a lot of help on this team, and I'm going to give it to you. These are the people who you come to know and are privileged to know in this community. I'll give you three men on your executive. They are faith, hope, and charity. Because you're going to need a lot of help, you must need your good friends from booster clubs and fans. And if you lose these people, these three good people, all of the stumbling blocks that have been your downfall throughout your life will gradually disappear. He went on to say, at the two right wings, I'm going to give you patience and tolerance. At the two left wings, I'm going to give you unselfishness and gratitude. For the two defensemen, enthusiasm and courage. For the two goalies, I'm going to give you honesty and humility. And at the center, I'm going to give you willingness. And it'll be necessary for you to use willingness on every play. Now, I'm not only your coach, but I'm the main official. There'll be no timeouts, and my decision shall be final. So I'm going to have to give you some ice rules. These rules are the Ten Commandments, as you've come to understand them in your daily living in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, the puck is the eternal soul, is your eternal soul, and the goal, the gateposts of heaven. So get in there and play hockey. There wasn't a dry eye when I finished talking to all those kids. And one of those kids was going to quit hockey. And my grandson drove him 4.5 hours to spend some time with me. And he came and talked to me, and his name was Kelly Gard. And I was just telling my buddy about it. He came and I talked him to go back, and he was a goalie. And in the playoffs this year in the Memorial Cup back in Canada, that just before you step up to the big stuff, they weren't in the Memorial Cup. They were the host team. But they won the Memorial Cup because Kelly won it for them. The guy was going to quit playing hockey. They scored one goal on him. One goal. And he was the most valuable player of the entire deal that week. And Kelly came and he said, Cease. The day you talked to me changed my life. And this would happen to me. So you see, we can do so much with this program because we have lived it. We have seen it happen to other people. We have seen it happen to ourselves. And you know, when I was in the program maybe 3-4 years, I was big. I had a new job and I was really going to work. It was 10 years, because I got fired in my 10th year. Didn't really get fired. I was told that if I didn't straighten up on some things, I'd have to leave. And I took about 3 minutes, and my big ego was way out of whack. I'd be driving to the penitentiary in my great big car, thinking, boy, those guys are lucky that the great one comes up here every week. And I went downstairs and I told my boss I didn't want, this was in July, and he wanted me to straighten up by fall. And I thought, well, I'm straightened up, and I went down and I quit. I walked away from probably $1 million, because I gave him 30 days notice, and when the last week he went away, he didn't want to be there when I left. And I was the manager of the largest ladies' wear store in Saskatchewan and 5 fur stores. And I went into his office when I needed something, and I was looking through something, and I saw Cease Corrigal file. Naturally, I opened it. And in there was that they were going to take me into the business. And all he was trying to do was to get me just to do a little bit more so that I'd be better for the business. And I walked away from it. I had a little cousin that was an Alcoholics Anonymous, and she came to visit me. She knew I was in trouble. And I had, you know, I don't know whether you noticed last night, but I wear clothes, it's a little different sometimes. And I went down to see Fern, and she was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I stood up in front of her in my big egotistical way, and I said, well, kid, how do I look? And she said these simple, simple words to me. She said, you look real good on the outside, Cease. How are you really on the inside? And I drove away to a roundup with a dear old man called Dave, who had a lot of sobriety. And we didn't talk, because Dave had heard Fern say that, and he thought maybe I was coming back. I didn't know I was away. But I got back, I went into business for myself and stayed in Alcoholics Anonymous. Never was away from Alcoholics Anonymous, but I was doing what I told you people not to do about those negative things. And all of a sudden, I became positive once again, and I start doing what I was telling other people to do. And I'm going to tell you something, that it worked. Everything turned out okay for me. So I'll leave you with this. Every one of you look real good on the outside tonight. How are you really on the inside? Thank you. God bless.